Welcome to the Ecology and Research Channel. Green issues, ecology, incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or other things aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it, thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
So today we're going to talk about power flower, well, move and talk about power flower intersectionality and the complexity of identity and oppression. And it's presented by Ebony Nichols, who is a somatic mental health and wellness practitioner, registered dance movement therapist and creative arts therapist. Then we have Dr. Charnay Foucron. She's a professional counselor, dance therapist, and creative rebel with a passion for inclusion, diversity, equity, and access. We have Dr. Angela M. Grayson. She is a spiritual leader, dance movement psychotherapist, international speaker, and educator. Melody Gamba is a mental health counselor, registered dance movement therapist, educator, dancer, choreographer, focused on embodied anti-oppressive practices. Then we have Stefan Reynolds. He's a somatic dance movement therapist, and he's currently doing a PhD at Leslie University. So I'm really, really happy to have you all here. And the session will be about intersectionality, complexity of identity oppression, and it will help participants explore how all inequality is not created equal by examining how social identities can overlap, which creates a complexity of oppression and privilege. The presentation utilizes creative and kinesthetic movement, creative art therapy modalities to help participants examine their experience and multifaceted identity to understand the depths of the inequalities and relationships among them. I am super happy now to explore this with you. And I hand over the words to the presenters. Thank you very much.
So welcome. Let's go over our shared agreements so that we can establish an understanding and baseline for our presentation. We will be gentle with yourself. Well, we ask that you be gentle with yourself, that you use people's pronouns, that you challenge ideas, not people, that you use I statements, move up, move back. We want you to move up and move back. Get used to using both of those directions. Don't make assumptions. Take breaks, move it out, and breathe it out. A lot of information that we're sharing may be heavy for you, so make sure that you remind yourself to take a break, move it out, and shake it out. All emotions are valid, every last one of them. Every voice also has value. These shared agreements have all been inspired by Black Lives Matter and the collective of all of us involved. So again, remember these shared agreements as we continue. And if there's any shared agreements that you guys feel are important, that everyone feels are important, please go ahead and voice those in the chat so that we can all be on one accord and again, letting your voice be heard. Thank you.
So before we move on with our own introductions, we will just wait and see if anyone has anything that's going to come up in the chat in terms of your own shared agreements. And so if it's safe to move on, I'll just take an opportunity to introduce myself again. I am Ebony Nichols. I'm a somatic mental health and wellness practitioner, dance movement psychotherapist, creative arts therapist, and I'm the Multicultural and Diversity Committee Chair-Elect for the American Dance Therapy Association. I am located in what is known as Brooklyn, New York, on the land of the Munsee Lenape tribe. I'm an African-American woman and a descendant of the Lumbee Native American tribe of North Carolina. My pronouns are she, her, and hers.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Angela M. Grayson, and I reside in the state of Delaware in the US. And I'm honored to be a visitor and a guest in the land of the Lenni Lenape tribe. And I am full-time private practice clinical psychologist as well as dance movement therapist. And I'm also the president-elect of the American Dance Therapy Association. And I also adjunct at Drexel University in Philadelphia.
Hello, everyone. My name is Stephen Reynolds. My pronouns are he, him, his. I'm a Black Christian PhD candidate at Les University. I'm an African descendant of Ogun State, Nigeria, and I'm a guest at this Creek Land here in Atlanta, Georgia, US of A. I am a somatic dance therapist and clinical trauma specialist at Chris 180. I'm a member and the creative director of American Dance Therapy Association. I'm a choreographer, dance artist, dance educator at various universities throughout the United States.
Greetings, everybody. My name is Melody Gamba, she, her, hers, coming to you from Providence, Rhode Island, and I'm honored to be a guest on the land of the Narragansett tribe. I'm a white Italian-American woman who is also a mental health counselor and dance movement psychotherapist at Butler Hospital, an adjunct faculty in the theater, music, and dance department at Salve Regina University. A member of the American Dance Therapy Association's Multicultural and Diversity Committee and Shared Space Committee.
Hello. Hello, I'm Dr. Sharnay Furcron. I am a Black Southern Catholic dance therapist living in Atlanta, Georgia, US of A guest of the Creek Indians, and I am the program officer and education director for Moving in the Spirit, along with being the multicultural and diversity chair for the American Dance Therapy Association. Welcome. Me and my colleagues have just introduced our shared identities. And when we talk about shared identities, we are referring to it as intersectionality. Intersectionality is a theoretical framework that identifies advantages and disadvantages that are felt by people due to a combination of factors. Intersectionality theory asserts that people often are disadvantaged by multiple sources of oppression, such as their race, class, sexual orientation, gender identity, religion, and other identifying factors. Intersectionality recognizes that identity markers do not exist independently of each other, but they often are together, and they often create a complex merging of oppression. Understanding intersectionality is essential to combating the interwoven prejudice people face in their daily lives.
So one big blaring question may be, why are we doing this work as practitioners? And the work for inclusive practice and looking at intersectionality is important because as you are moving throughout the world, as you are engaging and interacting with various people of different populations, there are things that are seen and things that are unseen. And so you're meeting very layered individuals. And if you are a somatic embodied practitioner, then you know even more firsthand how much of our intersecting identities are a big part of the work that we do. And so just to be clear, this is a smallish snapshot of a larger workshop that we do as a Diversity in Motion Research Collective that we have done historically for full day presentations or half day presentations. And right now you're just getting a smaller snapshot of what the Power Flower activity looks like. You'll see some information also going in the chat that our email, as well as the actual Power Flower activity, where you can go along with the activity as we move on.
All right, so we're just gonna review before we get into our Power Flower activity, and I promise that file will be in the chat box shortly. We're just gonna review some of the objectives of this workshop. We will be using kinesthetic movement, interactive discussions, and drawing from your own experiences. Participants will become more aware of one's various identities as it relates to the dominant culture. Understand how one's identity provides you with unearned privilege and how it affects others. Understand how one's identity lines up with dominant groups. Understand the dominant identity in the oppressive systems. Also, here are some expected outcomes. One, become more aware of the significant concepts related to identity, bias, power, privilege, and oppression. Have a better understanding of how unearned privilege impacts the oppression of others. And have a better understanding of the benefits of being part of a diverse community.
So we invite you now to take an opportunity to just tune into your own body awareness. And if you can, find some space or readjust your body depending on where you are, if you can take up as much space or as little space as you feel necessary. And just take a deep collective breath in. And breathing out. And take another breath in. And breathing out. And if you choose to just lighten your eyelids or close your eyes, it's up to you, it's fine. I want you to reflect on the word power. Where does this word land in your body? Do you relax into it? Do you tense up? Do you feel it in your chest, your heart, or your head? Just notice the sensations as the word power lands in your body. And now take a moment to find your power posture or power pose. And continue to think and reflect on the word power. Think back to a moment that you felt powerful or that you felt power. Was it in the workplace, in the classroom or academic setting? Was it at home or with family? And once you've settled into your posture pose, just take a moment to hold on to that. I don't know if some of us, this is our webinar, so we can't see everyone else in their posture pose, but you can look at the panelists if you can and just see what other people's posture pose looks like, or if you can imagine someone else's posture pose, maybe some of your peers or others in your life experience with you. And when you're ready, just take a breath and shake it off. And take another collective breath in and out. And reflect on the word oppression. Where does the word oppression land in your body? Do you relax into it? Do you tense up? Do you feel it in your chest, heart, or in your head? Just notice the sensations of the word and where it lands in your body. And when you have found that place, go into your oppression posture or oppression pose. And as you settle into that posture, think back to a moment where you felt oppressed or you felt oppression. Was it in the workplace, in the classroom or academic setting? Was it at home or with family or in your spiritual practice? And once you've settled in that pose, take a moment to glance at your screen. Notice if you can other panelists' oppression pose, or imagine the oppression posture of those in this life experience with you. And take a breath and shake it off. And as you begin to bring your focus back to the screen, reflect on the questions: how do you view yourself? And how does society view you? I'll say them again. How do you view yourself? And how does society view you?
Next, we're going to move into the Power Flower activity. Melody will share that with you now on the screen, and there's also a copy in the chat so that you can download it for your own use. If you have access to do that now, please do. If not, you'll have it for later. The Power Flower is an activity, one of the activities that we use in our day-long or half-day intensive workshop, and in like Ebony shared with you, we just wanted to give you a snapshot of the work that we do as a research collective. And this particular activity is very strong in the sense that it looks at our personal identity factors and how society views us or how we view ourselves. And so for this activity today, we are going to look at how society views us. So the closer you are to the center, the more privilege you have in society's eyes. And the further out you move on a particular pedal, the more oppressed you feel in terms of how society views you. So in the beginning, when we were introducing ourselves, you would notice that my colleagues told you a little bit more about themselves. They gave you their sexual orientation, their race or ethnic group, and I did not share any of that with you. So the only thing that you really know about me is my education, right? Because my name is Dr. Angela. And so on the education pedal, I may put myself closest to the center because that is considered an area of privilege to have a doctorate degree. Whereas on another pedal, for example, race, especially here in the United States, I may put myself closer to the oppression and edge of the pedal. And so for each of these, and this is not inclusive, these are a few of the personal identity factors that you may identify with. As you notice, there are also blank spaces on the flower for you to write in other parts of your intersectionality, as Dr. Charnay gave us the great definition of what that means. And so this is not all inclusive. And so we are only focusing on the ones that we have presented for you today, and also where you think society would place you on this particular exercise.
So we're now going to take this exercise and we're going to move it. Since it's an embodiment conference, we want to embody this experience. So the way we embody this, unfortunately, it's our virtual world. So we're adapting to a virtual standards and understanding. But we're going to make this thing happen. So we're going to demonstrate this in two ways. One, we're going to use a visual where you can physically see. So we're going to use our hands. I'm going to give a number 1 to 10. 1 being the privilege, the dominant society's viewpoint, and the closest to that dominant society or that center nucleus that was presented. And 10 being that outer part of the nucleus further away from the dominant society in that regard. So 1 being close to the nucleus, dominant society understanding or privilege, and 10 being that oppression side, the further away from the nucleus and in that regard, right? That ideology. So the first way we'll demonstrate it will be visually with our hands. And then the second way we're gonna do a moving. So I want us to either stand close to the screen or you're gonna move away from the screen. And for those of you that feel like you need to be moving back and forth, that's okay as well. But you want, for instance, so we're gonna look at we'll call out various aspects of the flower. We're gonna pull some of these petals apart and we're gonna delve into them a little deeper. So the first one that we're gonna look at, we're gonna practice this thing, we're gonna look at gender expression, right? So gender expression or gender presentation is a person's behavior, mannerism, interests, and appearance that are associated with gender in a particular culture context, or specifically in the categories of femininity, masculinity. This also includes gender roles and categories of stereotypes and gender. In this sector, looking at them on our intersectionality flower, we wanna look at gender as in the dominant culture represents that idealized and that socialized specification to your naturalized birth or what you're born at birth. So that cisgender refers to you identifying with the gender for which you were assigned at birth. So 1 is gonna represent that understanding, and then 10 is how society looks at how you prefer or how you identify. So whatever you choose your gender expression is, I want you to use that as your understanding and where you place yourself on the scale in our spectrum. So 1 being how do you identify with the cisgender norms or cisgender expressions based on societal's understanding of that and all of that regard. So let's all go. As I know you can see us panel, so panel folk, we will go ahead and demonstrate, and we want you guys also to participate with us. So we're gonna go and show you how we represent our gender expression on this scale. And as we look around, just take a deep breath and just look around. Look at where you think others in your family, in your circle, in your world may also place themselves in this understanding. Remember, 1 being close to privilege in societal norms, and 10 being away from that societal norm. So think about yourself, others you know, and you can look up at the screen and see where your panel has placed themselves. Everybody take a deep breath in. And exhale to shake it off so we can move about onto the next part of the flower.
Steph, some people are also putting their numbers in the chat, which is a good idea to think about who's around us.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. Yes, let's put those numbers in the chat. That's wonderful. That's excellent. Thank you.
Now, let's look at the petal of ability and disability. Ableism is a way to look at the world as if everyone had more or less functional bodies and minds because it's a norm. Ableism is often invisible. And some of the invisible ableisms are learning disabilities, mental illnesses, diseases that people cannot see. And lots of time there are more assumptions around the normal ability status. And, you know, people who do not have disabilities don't typically have to think about things that disabled people do. Now, an example of an invisible disability, I wear hearing aids. Most people don't know that until I tell them to, or I say, huh? So right now, take a moment and think about yourself on the spectrum of ability and disability. Where do you land? Are you closer to privilege? Are you further away? And if you're questioning your disability, you probably have one. Okay. Okay. Take a moment to notice others. Put your responses in the chat box. All right, let's shake it out. Mel?
All right, so next we're going to look at the pedal of body image. And body image, as defined by dominant culture in regards to Eurocentric standards of body shape, muscle tone, skin color, and beauty standards. So again, shifting closer to the center, if you feel that you align with those Eurocentric qualities, or further away if you feel that you do not. So let's take a moment and see where we're gonna move on the pedal for body image. And again, looking around the screen at the presenters, taking a peek in the chat to see where our community is at, and thinking about your colleagues, your friends, your families, and where they might land. Looking around, feeling how it feels in your body. Take a breath in. Exhale, and then shake it off. Dr. Angela.
All right. So next we are going to look at the pedal of religion, and particularly I'm going to focus here in the United States. And so here in the US, Christianity is considered the more privileged religion. So the closer you are in your practice of any form of Christianity, you will be closer to the center or identify as a one, as having more privilege. And if you are agnostic, atheist, or don't believe in any entity related to Christianity, then you will be further away, okay? And so either move or use your number to identify where you are on the spectrum of religion. All right, that's lots of numbers popping up in the chat. Just take a peek of where the presenters are. Nice, I like that people are putting also in the chat where they're located in the world. Thank you for that. Right, and shake that off. Take a breath. And I'm gonna pass it to Ebony.
So next, we're going to be looking at socioeconomic status. And socioeconomic status is defined as the social standing or class of an individual or group. It is often measured as a combination of education, income, and occupation. Examinations of socioeconomic status often reveals inequities in access to resources, plus issues related to privilege, power, and control. So thinking about that in terms of where you view yourself, one being closer to privilege in the social economic status, 10 being further away from privilege. And let's just take a moment to move that. And take a moment to look at the screen and at the panelists. If anyone shared in the chat box, looking at the community of our peers in this experience with us, where they find themselves. Take a breath in and shake it off. And coming back to the screen.
Hello, it's me again. We're gonna look at sexual orientation. Sexual orientation is defined as an enduring pattern of romantic and sexual attraction, or a combination of those, to a person of the opposite gender or sex, that the same sex or gender or both sexes or more than one gender. These attractions generally are subsumed under heterosexuality, homosexuality, bisexuality, asexuality, pansexuality, or polysexuality. So in our perspective, I mean, depending on, we're going to look at it from the your understanding of, from the dominantist culture's understanding of dominance, and which will be the heteronormative ideology, as opposed to the oppression or the non-traditional ideologies of particular, like the other listed sexualities, the homosexualities, bisexualities, pansexualities, trisexuality, all these various sexualities. So heteronormative to non-heteronormatives in that regard, one being our dominant society, 10 being the non-normative. So let's have a go with it. Here we go. Yes, lovely. So see, everyone is placing these numbers in the text. We enjoy that. Everyone take a look around and through the text and look up at the panelists so you can see how you relate and compare. And let's all collectively take a deep breath in. And let's exhale and shake it out.
All right, so finally, we're gonna take a look at our final petal that we're going to share in this particular part of the activity, and we're going to look at race. Just a reminder that this is how you perceive that society views you. May not be what you agree or identify with for yourself, but this is how society sees you. So for race, again, just based on wherever you live, you're going to be closer to the center if you are of the more privileged race in your country, and further away if you feel like society sees you as being less privileged. And so that means it's 1 for more privileged and 10 for less privileged, according to the race in the country where you are. Just take a peek at how the presenters are identifying in terms of where they place themselves on the race pedal here in the United States. And shake that out.
So again, we just ask you to sit with it, sit with it, sit with it. All of the things that come up, this is, again, we've reiterated many times, and you'll find us doing that because in this work, we are really concerned about safety, about how people carry this information on. And so again, this is a snapshot of a bigger presentation where generally you would have gone through lots of processes and definitions and closure. But for now, this is where we are. So again, reflect back to those questions. Is your understanding or your perception of how you view yourself and how you society views you different? And if you were to look around the room, would you be able to visually see where everyone is? If we were in the room together, you would see this as a human flower. We would all be flowering and, you know, experiencing these petals together in this space. But in the virtual space, we've had, you know, a nice use of the chat, and it will continue. I see that someone asked about asking questions, which we are opening up for questions and discussions. And again, just noticing, how do you view yourself? How does society view you? And type those noticings in the chat. So I see a response, the piece about how society see versus what we feel is so important. I don't know if the flower can be posted in the chat again, but if we can post that in the chat one more time for participants just to reflect back on. And I encourage you, if you do have a journal or an expression of your own, to take this time, not only just in the chat, but also move it in and through your own body.
Someone mentions being multi-ethnic. This is allowing me to think more about how the varying countries' societal views for each country's identify with its impacting countries identify with is impacting me retrospectively.
That's a good point, because a lot of us are coming from multi-identities or varying geographically different places. And so the multiplicity of what that looks like for each person. Again, if you are someone who is a practitioner and you are in the work, this is how clients, potential clients are coming to you. And if you are a practitioner, you're also holding on to that, all of those things, and presenting it in your work. So it is the self-reflection as well as the worldview.
Someone also mentions that, you know, due to their age, they feel society views them differently than they think of themselves. I think in a lot of our cases, we may not necessarily agree with societal views of us. I think for me, it resonates a lot with my double consciousness and having to live, feel I have to live a double life all the time and exist as someone else in order for society to accept me, as opposed to knowing that who I really am is not accepted. You know, and going back to resonating with Ebony said in terms of your clientele, you know, often, you know, it's about understanding who that client is and possibly trying to get to know those intersectionalities so that you can start to reach your client in a more authentic manner for who they are, as opposed to giving them that or aligning yourself with the societal understandings that often are chastising and or causing them hurt and harm. So looking and trying to get to know those intersectionalities is about listening to your client and asking those uncomfortable questions to help get to know them greater and deeper.
And I just want to add
I was going to add that that's why having these conversations are so important, because we make a lot of assumptions about other people because we are basing those assumptions on our observations rather than asking questions. Right, especially being in a digital age, because now everything is virtual. We don't have the luxury of really seeing each other, you know, full body and talking to each other and asking questions. And so everything is subjective. But the reason that it's important to talk about these things is, especially if you are a professional and you're working with people of all ages and all abilities and, you know, backgrounds, race, culture. Because as you see, when you went through the brief part of the exercise, because this is just a snippet of what we actually do as researchers, But I saw in the chat where people were saying, wow, this is really powerful. Oh my goodness, I never thought about this. And so when you look at where you placed yourself on a particular pedal, think about where somebody else may place themselves. And so that opens up a realm of compassion for fellow man and fellow humanity. And so that's why we do this work. And that's why it's important, so that we can kind of level the playing field for people or advocate from our point of privilege.
And I just want to add that I utilize the Power Flower in my practices and also within my classroom, so my students and my clients can actually identify who they are, and I can be more understanding of who sits in front of me. And it provides with lots of rich information.
So I just want to name, we're having a little tech difficulty where we can't put the PDF of the Power Flower in the chat box, but what we're going to do is bring the Power Flower back to the screen. If you can take a screenshot, go ahead. If not, you can always email us, and we could always email you the PDF as well, and we'll put our email address back in, but I'll share that Power Flower now. So feel free to snap a screenshot if you're able. All right. And like I said, I can also put our email address in the chat box again. If you weren't able to get a screenshot, we can certainly, if you reach out to us, we can send you the PDF of the document.
And there has been a question from the audience. Can you speak to how this has affected your presence in the largely white dominant DMT community?
I can start off with that one. Or Stefan, you want to go first? Go ahead, Stefan.
Sure. Again, being an African American, being a Black male in a white dominant DMT community, firstly, let me analyze being a male in the DMT community. Being a male in the DMT community reflects very similarly to being a male in the dance community. There are very few of us. And then taking it even further, being in a white DMT community, white DMT community, specifically a community that has for many, many years boast and educated others to engulf a style of dance that one has taken on many forms of other cultures, but yet have been reluctant to give them credit, and two, has realized the ideologies of an individual that has spoken down to individuals like myself, that have shown racism and has been engulfed in this world. So being a Black male entering into this field, I've always felt I've come to this field, you know, with my hands behind my back, you know, and a noose on my neck. So as a Black male an individual in this community, I've always felt chastised. Again, I've always been forced to live this double consciousness. Well, actually nowadays it's a triple consciousness, because there's also my own cultural connection to that as well. But I've had to be forced to live in this dichotomy where I'm forced to not be who I want to be in order to be understood and fit in. And looking, taking that closer to your clientele, when you have a large majority of clients that are like me, African-American male, we find ourselves being, you know, lost, because they're being diagnosed with diseases and illnesses that are culturally inaccurate. And so instead of dealing with the inaccuracy of the culture and the diagnoses, we're forced to do these interactions that are false, that are not genuine, that are not allowing for authenticity. So that's where I place, and that's why I'm navigating in this world, trying to get them to understand deeper intersectionalities and authenticity within our communities.
I can also speak to this particular question. I think that the dance movement therapy profession, just like many other professions, there could be underlying things like racism that come to the forefront as people, you know, continue to speak up and speak out about their experiences. And also this goes not just for dance movement therapy, but across any business entity, right? Even if we're talking corporate America, there are systems in place. And so things like racism is a systemic problem. It's not, you know, necessarily something that is in your face or overt, even though there may be people who speak up directly. But the way that we like to address those things is to open the dialogue, you know, open conversation. That's the only way we're going to learn more about each other. That's the only way we're going to have a better understanding. For me personally, I was the only person of color or Black person in my program when I was in school. And that was across three of the creative arts therapy modalities. But I kept going. And so, like I said, now I am president-elect of the American Dance Therapy Association, and that is no accident. So we don't look at where we started and stay stuck there. We look at the progression of where we're going and the changes that need to be made to be more inclusive and to be more culturally diverse and to be more aware and to be more sensitive about differences, because those are the things that make us stronger. Those are the things that give us the energy to keep going, because if I had stopped where I was, then I would not have had the reach to, you know, hold space for the students who are still going into programs, who are still going through alternate routes to become dance movement therapists. And so representation is important, right? People tend to stick and stay and gravitate towards, you know, places where they see people who look like them in leadership. And so for me, to be the first Black woman to hold this position within the association says that, you know, as dance movement therapists, whether you're a student, an educator, or a professional, we are progressing. And sometimes progression is slow, but it's still slow progress is still progress.
So sad to say that we're getting close to our time. So we're gonna just shift into some deeper reflection on these important kernels that we're already starting to dive into. So wanna invite you all just to take a few moments, and whether it's through movement, body sensations, journaling, art making, reflect on what you've experienced thus far. Which characteristics of your identity cannot be changed? Which characteristics are hidden or invisible? What does this say about your own power and potential for exercising power? And how might this influence your work as a practitioner? So again, just take two or three moments to reflect on these questions in your process so far. And then we'll welcome you back to the space in a few moments. I'll also put these in the chat. And as kernels begin to bubble up for you, we invite you to put what's come up for you in the chat that you feel comfortable sharing with us in this moment. Yeah. So true. Hard to put into words. If folks want to describe the movement that's coming up as well, I know we're in a webinar space today, but if you want to describe your movement, we welcome that as well. Hand over heart and deep, long breaths to feel that I'm alive. Experiencing hotness in my stomach. Again, difficulty trying to put reflections into words. I can't hide my race or religion, but I need to be sensitive to my students.
No, I think that's it. I can hide. They can hide their race and religion. For those, you know, being honest to those individuals that can't hide that race, you know, but so yeah, we like that. I resonate with that hand over heart. I think that's a great, as this talk is happening, I notice going more into oppression posture and how empowering it is to change that posture with intention. Nice.
As an educator, I try to meet people in our shared humanity. So a deeper understanding of power and oppression is so important as a facilitator.
Also be mindful that we are aware of the intensity and power of this particular activity. And we just wanted to give you a snapshot of the work that we do as a collective. And so please feel free to further explore this outside of the short time that we've been together so that you really feel in your body where you fall in terms of two areas where society sees you, but also where you see yourself. Like I said earlier, this is very subjective because you are experiencing, you know, on a somatic level, how strong of an impact society has on how you see yourself, right? Depending on where you put yourself on a particular pedal. And so take some time after this workshop when you get a moment to really go in and explore those things and what comes up for you on a body level and move that out, dance that out, breathe that out. And if you have words to journal that.
So in closing, because I know we're living close to our time, let's all take a deep breath in. And let's exhale. Again, we're going to take a deep breath in and we're going to exhale. This time you're going to deep breath in. You want to take a deep breath and realize all of your intersectionality and exhale your rightfulness in this place, in this world, and in all of your places where you are. Again, take a deep breath in and exhale. And as we close, I would like for you all to just leave us one word of what you feel, how you're feeling, what you're taking away, what you learned, what the journey is doing for you. One word, one feeling, one emotion. We'll use the chat so that we all can.
I believe he froze.
Okay. Experience it together.
There you go. You froze for a minute, Steph.
but
we heard. And if there isn't a word, we know that you have your own movement that you're experiencing and embodying at this time with us.
Sorry, I think I got kicked off, but I think I'm back. Sorry.
Good.
So, and as I said, everyone here, I said as a panel, we will share as well.
I'll go first. So I'm feeling gratitude.
I'm feeling wishfulness.
Community.
I'm feeling hope.
I'm feeling empowered. Thank you so much for your time and your attention. Our email is in the chat if you would like to stay in touch, if you have a question afterwards, or you want to stay connected. Thank you so much.
Thank you all very much. This was incredibly powerful, incredibly, I mean, I'm not sure if beautiful is that right word, but it was very touching. And I think we all really learned something tonight that we can share with the world. So I'm really grateful for that you were here. I actually still want to ask you something tonight. So if you could just very briefly let us know what you feel about it when I ask you about top tip of embodiment.
Top tip of embodiment. So I think for me as a practitioner first is really therapeutic relationship. That's super important for me. Just remaining open and acknowledging, affirming, responding to all of the layers of identity, intersectionality that comes up for clients. And for me as a human in this experience with all the other humans in the world, being present, keeping that reminder to be present when I get triggered or when I get agitated and bring myself back to presence.
I resonate with that. I would say for me as a practitioner, it's really about listening, right? And hearing the individual and allow myself to hear honestly and hear thoroughly, and not responding and just to respond. Because I think too often with the intersectionality, if we don't get to know the client and allow ourselves to sit in those moments of uncertainty and uncomfortability, then we're not doing our client that greatest of service. So that listening and hearing and truly understanding before I react and analyze and give all these assessments, right? And then as Ebony pointed out, as a human, for me, it's really about just like she said, being present. Like I have to be here and being okay with what my here is at that moment and knowing that whatever that here is okay.
For me, it's breathing, leaning into the discomfort, sitting in the discomfort, hanging out in the discomfort, not getting away from the discomfort, just getting all in it. And this is inspired from a mentor of all of us, I think I can speak of Carmen Marshall, which is speak from love and compassion first.
And for me, in life and as a professional, it all starts with the relationships, developing authentic relationships in your life, within your practice, and accepting everyone with respect and love.
Again,
top tip, I just wanted to just quickly say, I know we're going, but to remember to use your breath. We come into the world with a breath and we leave with a breath. And so always connect to your breath to help regulate you on a body level.
Thank you so, so much for sharing all this. I think all the attendees will agree with me that this was just simply wonderful and very powerful. So I actually have not more words than that to add on to it. You said everything. I think we let go of our emotions. We realized new things. We realized how complex this all is. So this is really, I'm very thankful for this.